Welcome to False Bottom Girls, a podcast about the wonderful yet sometimes confusing world of beer and brewing.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hudson, owner of Pilot Brewing and an advanced cicerone.
Hi, I'm Jen Blair, sensory expert, homebrewer, and advanced cicerone. All right, welcome everyone. Well, that was a little weak. Let me try that again.
It's Monday
welcome
morning.
Everyone to this Monday morning recording of False Bottom Girls, right? That's right. It's been so long, Rachel, that I'm not exactly sure.
It's just an illusion of their mind.
Right. Yes. And it will probably come out on Monday morning. So maybe somebody is listening to it and they're like, ugh, Monday mornings. Am I right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's You're us. Right. Rachel is vacation Rachel right now, beach Rachel.
Yeah. I am finally away from my brewery, away from Beer Week, away from Cicerone, away from all things beer. Well, not. I'm really not away from all things
except
beer.
Except this podcast.
our distributor is like, hey, would you like to visit some accounts while you're down there? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I would. I mean, I should.
Yeah.
I won't make it too much of a thing, but I probably will one or two. But yeah, so figured this is just as good a time as any to record some podcast episodes.
Yeah.
I got the time and mostly got the energy. So let's knock out a couple. And yeah. on our quest to telling you about the boiling process, we're going to pick right back up with, I guess we took a break. We threw in an episode of pasteurization a couple weeks ago, but we're going to get back to boiling. I was going to say pasteurization, boiling. I mean, it comes like
they're not unrelated.
They're not on. Yeah, thank you. That's what I was looking for. But yeah, so we're going to talk about boiling today. All things boiling.
Yes.
All things.
And I hold a special place in my heart for boiling after the Master Cicerone last year, Rachel, because of you. Like, I have a special boiling Rachel shape in my heart.
I know we might have mentioned this before, but like last year I was just like, listen, today, the first day we're going to talk about mash in the cellar and the second day it's going to be boiling. And I think I came to that conclusion after we had talked about mash. And I don't know why. I didn't know anything, but I was like, this is what's going to happen tomorrow. I need you to learn this card I made for you. You're like, yes, okay, I did.
Yeah.
And we both go in there and boo, it was boiling. And so we come out like super duper confident, like 100%. Like, and so of course we studied the same thing. I just wrote down the same thing for her that I studied, right? So That's what's fresh on our mind, the exact same answer. So our scores were pretty close.
Yeah.
But there was one thing that even during the test, the proctor was like, just like maybe one more thing. And I'm like, not one more thing. He's like, maybe one more thing. And I'm like, not one more thing. He's like, maybe look around at the instruments around you and see if there's one more thing. I was like, no, one more thing. Like, I said all the things. And Jen had like the same, she probably handled it better. She had like the same, you know, internal argument or disagreement or conversation. Right.
Yeah, like, you know, I have like, nothing else for you, sir.
We're both like, what is the one more thing? And then that is our feedback, too. Like, our feedback on our exam is like, oh, almost just missed one thing. Like, almost to 100, which is fine. Like, I can take my 98 or whatever it was. But we're just like, what is it, mother? Because they can't tell you the answer in your feedback. So it's not like he could tell us. But you're just like, why not tell me the one thing?
Right.
Like, what? So I swear to God, like, it must have been like a month before this last test, like 11 months later, I'm like just sitting there for some reason. And I was like, Jen, the one thing, I know what it is. It's fucking pH. I know it. I don't know why I know this, but we didn't talk about pH. And which makes sense because he was like, look around and see if there's something that stands out. You know, when he says that, I'm like looking into the boil kettle.
Right. I'm like, hand me your clipboard. Look around. I'll look at what your rubric says.
You look around, sir. So that was totally the one thing. But yeah, that is why boiling holds a special place in our heart. Not to mention the fact that I've had, like, there's a couple styles out there where you might not boil or you might come close to the boil.
Yeah, we interviewed Linda Van Loon about that. They do raw ale or raw
But
beer.
you better know what you're doing when you do stuff like that. That's all I gotta say. Because boiling, as you will learn on this episode, provides a lot of benefits. But speaking of Master Cicerone, I have to start with this side story. I have to start with
Always.
this side story. Over the weekend, we had a nice tap takeover at a local grocery store, in which during that time, I received a nice message from a guy who was trying to be nice. Now, I have to read
Yes,
this.
who went to
Who went to
considerable
the tap
effort.
takeover?
Right, but he went to considerable effort. Like he went to your website, he did the contact form, he filled out the contact form. So I just need everybody to keep that in mind. Like I know the end of the story, so or I know the next couple chapters of the story, but this gentleman went out of his way to contact Pilot after this tap takeover.
A tap takeover that he was in attendance of and tried some beer. So I'm going to read this whole thing because I just need it to read the whole thing because there are so many side things that I could stop and say, but I just need to read the whole message so we can
All
all
right.
have good take. All right.
Do the
Hello.
voices.
You want a voice? Is that what you
Sure.
said?
Yeah, I
I
said
don't
do the voices.
know. Hello. I assume. It's probably a good assumption. On Friday, you did a tap takeover on Lowe's Food in Concord. He's old. That's how he sounds. I've only had a few of your beers, and I consider them good. I'm a master cicerone, so I have a pretty good idea about beer. All I'm going to stop at the voice because that's not good. At the tap takeover, I had your Dunkelsbach, Marzen, and Porter. Oh my God, sensational! What three fabulous beer! GABF Golf. He meant gold. GABF Gold, FYI. I've had a harvest celebration. I had a harvest celebration. It took me a second. Not a Sierra, not a beer. He hosted a party and served his double bock, parentheses, notes of raisins and prune, to my mix of 85 guests. They all loved it, even the females who drink Coors Light and Michelob. Ugh, thanks for great beer. Prost.
Females, am I right? Ugh.
Okay. First of all. Second of all, you are not a master cicerone. Oh my God.
It's like the easiest thing to doubt, like to check. There's 28, and you are not one of them.
I'm reading this message. I immediately stop at that line, being like, who is sending this? First of all, master cicerones don't say, so I have a pretty good idea about beer. They don't say that. They don't say that. All 28 of them. They don't say
I feel
that.
like most master cicerones can also spell Doppelbach correctly, which is something
Oh
that
yeah.
was
Lots
not
of
spelled correctly.
errors. But yeah, second of all, this is all Googleable. You can go to the Cicerone website. There's a whole directory. They have everyone listed. Beer server, certified, advanced, master, all four levels. You can search it by name, you can search it by level. Lots of ways to look it up.
Yeah, and those are updated like almost at the same time.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Well, like
Yeah. Like if you
it's
get your
weak.
results within
Also, it's
a
not
few
updated.
minutes, it'll probably be
Yeah,
on the directory. So it's not
exactly.
like once a month the directory gets updated, or it's not like BJ, you know, like the BJCP website will get updated like every 6 weeks. It is not like that. So it's not like somebody who we did not meet at the Master Cicerone exam in October passed and we
Like, I
didn't
don't know
know
about
about
it.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
And
I don't know about it
yeah.
as a Cicerone employee.
Okay. And okay. I give this guy, granted, I give him, like, I know that there's 28 master cicerones. I don't know every single name by heart. I haven't met every single person, but I know none of them live in Concord where you signed your name from, sir.
Right.
Like,
Concord
so,
being a
and town, county in North Carolina. Near Charlotte.
north of Charlotte.
So,
Suburb. That's what I was trying to think. Suburb. And
yes,
all I could think of
yeah.
was subdivision. And I was like, it's not subdivision. Suburb.
Yes, exactly. And I know you're not one of them. I know you're not a master. Like, that's all I need to know right there is that you signed your name from Concord. I know that you're not a master cicerone. The only one that lives anywhere near me is Joe. And then Jen is probably second closest.
Right.
So, Like, okay, so I respond after a minute. And I was like, hey, I also wait till I get to my computer because I want the full, got my email signature that says Advanced Cicero and says that, I want to look legit.
Right.
So
And we're
I
using a
follow.
pseudonym for this gentleman.
And I said, hey there, thanks for reaching out and for the kind words about our beer. I have to say, I'm pretty shocked you called yourself a Master Cicerone. This is a program I have been in since 2012. You do know that the Cicerone status of people is public directory on their website, right? You're not even a certified beer server, which I did go to look up his name. I was like, unless your name is Amanda, hit with the same last name as him, which I was like, in that case, you should reach out to him to let them know that they messed up your first name. However, I seriously doubt that is not the case.
Right.
There are only 28 Master Cicerones in the world, and being an advanced Cicerone myself, I know them all. Like I mentioned before, I don't personally know them all, but I know enough to know that you're not one of them. And I did look them up, FYI, just to make
Right.
sure I wasn't
Yeah.
crazy or
No,
wrong.
and that was the first thing when Rachel sent me the screenshot that I did was go to the directory and look him up to see like, okay, well, what level is this guy?
None. No levels. He
None
is
levels.
zero levels. I have forwarded your email to the Cicerone program. Please never claim a title that you don't have, especially one that people have put their life into. Like me, it is so insulting. Then, about an hour later, I
Okay,
get
wait,
this.
let me predict. He emails back and says, I am so sorry. You're right. I was wrong. I should not try to defraud people, or I should not
That
try
is like the
to, I
worst
should not
prediction
lie.
ever. That's like
I
the worst
know.
prediction.
It's all it's opposite day.
That would have been the good thing to do. That's the one thing that gets you not called out on a podcast. Instead, hey Rachel, this is his response. Hey Rachel, take a step back, my almost colleague. You're not even in the same ballpark as I am. I've learned from one of the best who started the craft beer industry. Does Brooklyn Brewery sound familiar to you? Probably not. No, really, you really don't know them all. Ever hear of Trogs? Yeah, probably not. Let's be honest, you've never entered the GABF, quote, or parentheses, probably because of malts you use are substandard. And
Such a weird insult.
the remainder of your beers are questionably concerning quality or questionable concerning quality. Yeah, that's the end of that one. But he follows up like 5 minutes later with another one and says, here's a tip from a brewer. Learn the ropes of business. Don't claim a title when your product is average at best. Sir,
Maybe it
everything
was
I have
opposite
earned,
day for him as well.
you can look it up, sir. I have one. They're all, you can go to the GABF website, you can go to World Beer Cup website, you can go to the NC Brewers Beer Cup website.
You can go to your website.
I can also go to my website. You can look on my fucking can label of pub ale that you, well, I guess pub, I don't know what you were, I don't remember what you tried, but I love how my beers go from sensational.
Yes, I had these at a grocery store. I came home. I found a way to contact you to tell you how good your beers are.
And then I
And
call
then
you
he
out
called
on
you.
your
Yeah.
bullshit title. Stop telling people you're a master cicerone. Everyone, like, first of all, sir, I would like to let you know that I am moving right down the street from this particular grocery store, which is going to become my new watering hole. We're going to meet.
Oh shit. Now, I love
Going
that
to meet your
he.
wife. I heard all about you from the bartenders that work there when I shared this message,
I
sir.
love you think that this man is gainfully married and not divorced.
Well, it's true. I don't know if they're married, but they did. The people working there were like, oh, yeah, he always comes in with this lady name.
Got it.
And I was like, well, does she
I
think
love that
he's
you've
Master
already
Cicerone?
done recon on this guy.
Well, the audacity, like I'm sitting at this event that he claims to have all these beers from. It only started 30 minutes ago when I got this message. Where are you?
Wow. That's wild. I didn't even know. I didn't know. I didn't realize that you were there when it started. I love that.
It's like,
Yeah, this guy does the equivalent of responding, and like this guy obviously calls women fat and ugly online and thinks that that is like the worst thing that he could call. But I'm sorry, a female. He definitely calls
Yeah, female.
females fat and ugly online.
So, anyways, after we record and post this episode, I will be sending him the link, thanking him for my podcast content. Everyone, thank you, the Master Cicerone who lives in Concord. Not the Master Cicerone who lives in Concord. Oh my God. I still like the, and like I shared this with a couple people that work at Pilot, ones that have gotten their second level or achieving or trying to, because if you do anything in this program, it's infuriating to learn that someone is out there. And you know what? This isn't the first time we've encountered people impersonating to be different levels of Cicero, which
Yeah.
is sad. It takes a certain type of narcissist to not only pretend, but then to like double down.
Right.
And like, I love his argument. He's like, no, I'm not. You are. You haven't even, your GABF medal's fake. You probably never even entered. Like, what are you saying?
I bet you never even got GABF golf.
Oh my
Yeah,
God.
no, I do agree with you that, and I've encountered it
Entitlement.
too. And it is like it's such an easy thing to verify. And I understand, I do know that sometimes like employees will go through training at their job for maybe like certified beer server, and they're not clear that they don't have their certified beer server. You know, they're like, well, I went through the training, I thought that I had it, you know, like that's no big deal. You don't accidentally forget that you're a master cicerone.
No.
You just don't. And I agree with you that,
28 people in the whole world. I would never in
yeah.
my life claim to have a title that I don't. That I mean, we're not even talking like a lawyer here. Only 28 people have this title in the whole
Right.
world. Make
Right.
something a little easier to figure,
Yeah.
to fake.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Tell us you're a BJCP judge or something like. That's
If
not
he could
as
have
easily
said,
verifiable. Or just don't lie in the first place. Just be a nice person who liked your beers and wanted to tell you how much he liked your beers. But, you know, not all of us
Ridiculous.
can work for the inventor of craft beer.
FYI, sir, I have hosted a beer dinner with Garrett Oliver. We know each other. I'm not gonna lie, he probably doesn't remember me. It was a long time ago. But the point being is, I am in your world. Challenge you. I challenge you to ever come at me with beer knowledge. I will destroy you. Okay? Let this be the message to you. Anyways, I think we came on here to talk about boiling.
Yeah, now that you're
Now that I'm
boiling.
boiled up.
Yeah, that whole thing is just comical, and it is. It's very frustrating that like just most of the people we know, most people don't just lie or falsify credentials, and it's like it's so easy to look it up. You could have left that out, and that was a lovely email for you to get.
Yeah. You
Except
could
for
have just
the
said, I'm a beer
females.
fan. Yeah. And
Yeah,
also,
the females.
I'm a woman. Okay, female what? Female dog, female gerbil, female cat. What are you talking about here? You talking
Female
about a lady,
human?
a female human? That's called
Ex
a woman.
or just don't talk about the
Or just
females
motherfucking email
who
me again.
drink Michelob, because who cares? Let people
Yeah,
like what they like.
seriously. You and your stupid car
Anyway,
races.
notes of fig and
Anyways,
raisin.
I hope you have a good day, sir. Go enjoy your made up credentials in life.
Go enjoy your double bock. We've got the emotional boiling out of the way. Now we can go to the concept of
The act of
boiling and brewing.
physically boiling beer. If we gave this task to Nick in Love is Blind, season 7, do you think he would be able to bring the boy beer to a boil?
Nick,
You gotta be a hardcore Love Is Blind
you don't
fan to
even know
get
how to
that
boil
one.
water, Nick. I clean all the time. Sorry, we've been on a Love Is Blind streak.
Yes.
No, that is a very good question, and I don't think that Nick would be able to boil water.
It would be spewing out of the kettle and like boil over. And he'd be like, I think you're spoiling. He's like trying to catch
How much water do I need?
it.
Do I turn on the heat? How do I do that? How does water boil?
Oh, well, all right. Boiling. So, some of you guys may have heard that we won this awesome award for the North Carolina Brewers Guild of Writers. Is that right? Did I say
No.
that right? I was looking
The
for it once.
yes, the North American Beer Writers Guild, of which
Thank
I am a
you.
member, and so we submitted our podcast and we got second place for best technical podcast, which I
That's
think is just awesome. And Rachel and I had this whole conversation about it because, honesty time, we've been discussing, over the past few weeks, like, where do we want the podcast to go? Do we want to keep doing it? And like winning this award was so meaningful to both of us because it was like, not only are we being recognized by our peers, but it's also two women winning an award for a
yes.
technical brewing podcast. And I don't know if there are any other technical brewing podcasts out there that happen to have two women as hosts. And so, like, for us, it was just like, wow, that is super cool. And it's the same thing, like when I've been, we've talked about it before on the podcast, when we submit proposals to speak places, like I'm very much like, we need to talk about a technical topic, because
Oh, yeah.
people need to see women on stage talking about technical topics. So yeah, that was super cool to get that and get that recognition.
And I mean, obviously, besides being super awesome, like one of the other reasons I bring it up is because part of our feedback from a host, and this is all our judged, and this is all fine feedback. It's not to say
Yeah, we
anything,
got
but
good feedback.
we got feedback, but there's one part is like, they do tailor some of this stuff heavily to like if you're studying for Cicerone, because Cicerone is a big part of our life. And I bring that up because my outline for our boiling episode is the syllabus for Cicerone.
Yes, which I will also say, I do this as well. And for people out there who are studying for any level, first of all, you need to read the syllabus. Like that sounds silly, but the
Yes.
amount of people who seem to not know that there's a syllabi for each level or syllabus for
Yes.
each level, you need to read the syllabus. You need to revisit the syllabus. Like when I was studying for master, I reread the syllabus like every Monday and would
Yes.
make notes of things like, okay, I don't feel confident about this, and like that list gets shorter and shorter as you go along. But yeah, you need to read the syllabus, but using the syllabus as the template for your outlines is the way to go. That way, you make sure that you don't
For
miss
sure.
anything and it kind of puts guardrails on your studying to protect against you going down rabbit holes.
Yes, and they're that person giving us that feedback is absolutely correct. I mean, a lot of this is us studying. You're getting our study notes essentially, and we use that syllabus as our outline. So,
Right.
like today's episode, I literally have that part of the syllabus on the top of my notes. If you want a little bit of a guideline on how to follow along, but I thought that was interesting feedback because one, he's correct, and then two, it made me think like. Well, I mean, we're taking this. This is definitely an advanced syllabus outline I have at least. We're sure we're covering a lot of the things that need to be covered. So don't take that as, which is a feedback that you're never going to see because I only shared it with you now. But it's just, I just say it kind of had me thinking, like, what are we missing? Are we missing anything? It's like, not really, not with what, at least today's episode. There's could be a lot of in-depth information out there that you could go down a rabbit hole, but I think we do a good job, or at least that syllabus does a good job of preventing that, like Jen said. So I just brought that up for no reason that anyone really needed to know, except
No,
but
it's
that's what
good.
we're
It
using.
gives, like you
Yeah.
said, it gives people insight into what our study processes
And
are
how we,
because we've both been very successful. So maybe you can,
yeah.
maybe what we're
We
sharing is
win.
helpful, maybe not.
Maybe not, yeah. But we did win an award, so it's probably pretty
Well, we didn't get first though, so
Yeah, well, that's okay.
that's okay.
Okay, so we're gonna start with boiling. Definitely if you want to get the full picture, go back to our mashing and our lautering episode. You can start there. This boiling is gonna come right after lautering. We've collected all the wort from that lautering process that we want. And we've checked our gravity. That's a very big, important part. of even before boiling. And I think it's a good place to start because honestly, we didn't really talk about that, which I don't think we really talked about that lottery episode. We like, yeah, you collect your wart, but when is it good enough? There's a
Yeah,
couple
you're
of
right.
things you need to have, like with your recipe. And if you have any experience brewing, you know this. But if you don't, typically we, for an example, I use Beersmith in the brewery. My equipment comes with its own profile setup. It has a big effect on my recipe. I've gotten things dialed in where I know things are going to be a certain gravity for my pre-boil and my post-boil. However, your pre-boil could really dictate how you treat your boil. So it is really important. And I think I'll start there.
Definitely. And
Before
that
we.
is an excellent point because I know that I, even as a home brewer, my gravity has dictated how I need to change my boil or how I need to adjust to get to the end goal. So that is
Exactly.
such an insightful point.
You can't just take all the wort from your mash, right? Like there's it gets to a point where you're sparging. If you remember talking about that act of sparging when you're putting water in, that's a certain amount of volume of water that you should be adding. It's not infinite. Same with watering. It's a certain amount of volume of wort you should bring over. And then depending on the quality of that wort, whether you should be keeping it. So for an example, I'm going to use left not left hand Nota as an example, because when I was brewing jam session, we would do this, and it was very it was anyways we would do this thing where we're bringing over the water, the wort from the water, and we would take a gravity. So we had left or Nota has this really cool contraption where the water goes through this pipe, and it has a little sample valve and a sight glass right there, so you can see it. You can just take samples as you want.
Oh, cool.
You don't have to like get a sample and risk burning yourself and pouring it in, and but so towards the end we would start sampling that gravity in the refractometer, and once it got above like right at 0.08, we would stop collecting, because anything under 0.08, and I'm talking about terms of specific gravity like 10.08, typically can be kind of astringent. You don't really want that wort. But our gravity would be, our pre-boil would be higher than what we wanted. So when I say the word pre-boil, I do mean like the measurement of the sugars in the wort before boil starts. And that needs to be a certain measurement based upon my recipe. Well, my recipe might call for 10.52, for an example, which might be kind of high for that beer, but anyways, I might be getting 10.56. So for that beer, our protocol was bring over as much wort until it hits that 10.08. Then we add water to the pre-boil before we boil to bring down the gravity measurement, because we're diluting that solution with water, right? So like less sugars. So that's really important. If you are not taking that measurement, you have no idea if you're like, sometimes shit could go horribly wrong. And your mash, you just did a horrible job, and you're aiming for like 10.45, but you only have 10.25. That's a huge problem.
I've done that before, like forget to add all the malt that I like, or I, like especially on a home brew, if I have to measure out, say, like 15 pounds of grain, I usually do it in like 5 pound increments. And I've done that before where I have been like, okay, 5 pounds, 5 pounds. Well, that's 15 pounds all done. And yeah, I don't realize it until I start to take my gravity and then have to figure out what I did. So yes, that is easy enough to do.
And if you don't check, then how are you ever going to know? And though, so let's say that happens, there are certain things you can do. You can boil longer. If it's a big jump, like the example I just gave you, that's going to be a little bit more dramatic in what you might do to save it. But, things you can do are boil longer. You can extend your boil to 90 minutes versus 60. If you do that, you don't change the hop additions. If you have a 60-minute hop, it still goes in at 60 minutes. It doesn't go in at
Right.
the start of the boil. Just because it's the start of the boil normally, it doesn't mean you. So also boiling for 90 longer than 90 minutes, you don't really want to do that unless you really have to. So there are limits there, right? You can do things like add dried malt extract to the towards the end of your boil or in your boil or whatever. And that will increase your gravity. It will thin out in the body of your beer a little bit, but it's all a compromise at that point. And the other thing is if you don't know this number, and if it's not perfect and you need to fix it, it's going to throw off your bitterness, your IBUs, and your hop content. So if you're getting a really, really low gravity, but your top build is made for the gravity that you're anticipating. Now, if you can't reach the target that you want, you're going to have to lower that IBU addition so your beer isn't overly bitter and balanced. So, for all those reasons, so important to know your gravity before you actually start the act of boiling. Even if you do start, I've had brewers who like are 30 minutes into the boil and they're like, "Hey, my gravity's 5 points low," and I'm like, "Why are you just telling me now?" So now I can't really do anything. Now my options are more limited because I can't add boil time because you've already added 60-minute hops, so I can't add 30 minutes to the boil. I can't. Well, I can add DME, but I'm only gonna be out a certain amount. The best thing in the world to be. So anyway, so before your beer, as you're heating up, this is something you remember too. Like on our small system, like our Co-Pilot half barrel system, if you are perfect on your lautering, like keeping time wise with the heat, because you're putting heat on your boil kettle as you lauter, you're not going to collect everything and then bring it to a boil. It's going to take forever. But if you get really good at it, you can basically start your boil and your lauter's done. So you have like 5 minutes to get the measurements that you need before your boil starts. So
Right.
it's all really important to make sure that you can't just end lauter, start boil. There's a big bridge there that needs to be gapped. And if you didn't do something right in the mash, it's going to determine your boil. Then we have to boil. Well, we don't have to. We talked about styles that require no boil, but we're going to talk about this like boiling is the end all be all
Right. We are
because.
working for the inventor of craft beer. So we are making craft beer. So nothing fancy. We don't even know about that.
Did you know that Trogs boils their beer?
Probably
Bet
not.
you didn't.
You stupid idiot. Anyway.
Oh my God, what a fucking idiot. All right. So why is boiling so important? If you could give me eight reasons.
And just look around. Just look
Just
wherever you are right now. Just look around. See if you can find one more reason why boiling is important.
start back to the beginning of time
Right. Unless you're
when that
driving, in which case, keep your eyes on the road.
when water had bacteria in it. Why did they boil that? We bring typically most recipes, you're going to boil your beer for an hour to an hour and a half. Some breweries, maybe 3 hours, depending on tradition, history, stuff, just history, like type of way you're brewing, I should say.
A brewery I worked at did a 24-hour boil and
I bet I can
started,
guess what brewery that is.
I bet you can, started with, and it was actually the end product was very cool because the recipe was 100% Pilsner malt. And by the time the boil was done, the
Beautiful.
SRM was probably 20 or so. Listen, here I am. I bitch about people trying to do SRM all the time because we're not lab instruments. The end product was like a reddish brown, and it was 100% Pilsner malt. And that was the point was, we're just going to boil this for 24 hours and kind of see how it turns out. And they took samples, like I think after like each hour, and lined them up so you could see how the color was changing. But yeah, most places do not do 24-hour boils.
I mean, cool experiment, but not a good way, not a good business way to run your business. Like, not to make all the time. I mean, cool experiment though. But yes, it is technically recommended hour and a half is your max. You can get unwanted flavor, especially if you have hops. That's what it really comes into. These breweries and like barley wine, some of these higher ABV styles are known to have a longer boil. Things with decoction mash too, like to help with flavor development. It is very style dependent. These are not going to be include the addition of hops. The hops will be there like at a regular 1 hour schedule. So you do need to know when it's appropriate, when it's not. Most styles that we'll be talking that we know of, the majority of styles have
Right.
anywhere from a 60-minute to a 90-minute boil. And I'd say the big difference in those times is probably the amount of Pilsner malt that you're using in your malt bill. And that's
Yeah.
probably the main difference between those two times. Now, if you do something like you're short on gravity and you want to boil for 90 minutes for that reason, that's a different
Yeah.
reason. But
I've done that, but that's also because I'm really lazy at taking my gravity. So I do everything you said not to do. And then I'm like, well, but I'm, you know, for me, it's also home brewing. So, like, I think I've mentioned
Oh,
this before. I'll aim for the top of the gravity range. And then if it's in the middle somewhere, that's fine because I'm just brewing it for me to drink.
get
If I were brewing professionally, I would be much more careful and meticulous about
Yeah.
keeping track of those things.
Especially when you're trying to make the same beer, which
Yes.
is even more important. But
Right.
so the reason we boil, it acts as wort sterilization, enzymatic activity.
Right.
Inactivation is what I was trying to say. It has effects on the proteins with a hot break, with cold break. It isomerizes hops. It has effects on hop utilization. It has effects on hop aroma, and flavor, color development. It has effects on pH, which is the one thing that we miss. And it's a good place to add addition for sugars and syrup, like really sticky things that might not do well in like a mash when you're trying to get sugar.
Right, and that will also sterilize those. Like that's usually a big
Yes, and
reason why you add
sterilize.
those things then, or like, you know,
Yes.
spices or something, because it's
Spices as
if
well,
you throw it in there,
sterilization.
they're sterilized.
It's hard to sterilize things like citrus, spice, the
Right.
sugar syrups, because it's hard to get them sterilized enough for hot side without, I mean cold side, without
Right.
doing a bunch of stuff to them. So this is an easier way. Things like fruit, depending on the fruit, I feel differently about fruit and boil. We'll get to
Right.
that in a little bit too, about your different what you can add and what you can't add, which a lot of it can be brewer's preference, but I think there's a lot of good reasons for both.
Sure.
So, you know, with wort sterilization, boiling is going to provide enough heat to make sure the wort is free from any bacterial contamination. Things like lactobacillus can be easily killed by heat. Lactobacillus lives on malt. So any type of bacteria that might carry over from the wort is going to be killed off in the boil. With enzymes, so during our mash, we activate our alpha and beta amylase enzymes for starch conversion into short and long chain sugars. So when you start to heat up your wort up to a boil, it's going to kill that activity. So things aren't still converting. It's going to stop where it's been left off after that hour mash or hour and a half mash. So most of this action will cease like during lautering, but boiling will cease any sort of remaining activity that is left over. And hence, that's why we get like dextrin content and final beer. So dextrins are complete complex carbohydrates, and in the absence of enzyme activity to break them down into simple sugars, brewer's yeast cannot ferment them. So, you know, there's effects on proteins as well, allowing these proteins in the boil to break out of suspension and coagulate and fall like to the bottom of your boil. So much of it doesn't end up in your fermentation tank, which can have, if you have too much protein, can have a de detrimental onto your clarity of your beer, to the stability of your beer, and other parts of mouthfeel characteristics, things like that. I guess this kind of goes with that. When we talk about like the boiling effects on proteins and like how it will help coagulate them and bring them out of solution and keep them out of your final product. There's also other things that you can add into the boil that will help with that, like Irish malt, for an example, or wolf lock. So these things have like a negative charge and they will latch on to these proteins and help them participate out of suspension, which can, you know, thus we want clear beer, despite what everyone says. We want clear beer at the end of the day, so we're trying to keep a lot of that stuff out. Irish malt kind of looks like grits, kind of even tastes like grits. If you've ever tried it, which I
Okay.
have. Well, we used to have left
I
turn,
you know the
and
thing where you can look at things like I've never like I don't think I've ever eaten like a cardboard box, but I know what it would taste like if I licked it, or like I don't think I've ever tried urine, but I feel like I have an idea of how it tastes.
yeah.
I would not have thought grits for Irish moss.
Well, working at Left Hand one time, I tried them because, you know, naturally you do that sometimes. You
For
know, because
sure.
you had your, what is it called, hops. So you get your hop bucket, you're like, well, I'm gonna put my Irish malt in, so you put a little scoop in, and like the powder comes up and smells the grits. And then one time I was up there being like, ah, oh, yeah, it tastes like grits. And one of the brewers was like, maybe I'm using too much Irish malt in my beer at home because my beer tastes like grits. And I
Oh, shit.
was like, oh, interesting. Interesting. Maybe you are.
Yeah.
So, not sure. But yeah, so Irish malt is like a, well, I just said looks like grits. And then you can have like something called Wolf Flack. And Wolf Flack can come in like a powder form too, but I get it in a tablet form, so it makes it a little bit easier to work with. But both of
Yeah.
these things are just clarifying agents that you can use in the hot side, in the boil. You would
Right.
not use these in a fermenter. Those are going to have different types of clarifying agents.
One thing that I really like about like home brewing and, you know, like even on bigger system, well, on like a system like Pilot, not like on, you know, like a 5-barrel system that is obviously going to have a lid on it, but you can see the hot break happen.
Oh, yeah.
And
Oh, yeah.
it's really cool to be able to see that. And I remember when I was learning to homebrew, I could not get clear if it was hop break or hot
Oh,
break.
yeah.
And like I remember asking my husband, like, hop break? And he's like, no, hop break. And I'm like, hop break? And he's like, no, hot break. And I'm like, just spell it. What is it? Which one are we saying?
Just smell it.
Because yeah, it's like, well, hop break also kind of, you know, makes sense, but it's like,
No,
no,
totally.
hot,
You're adding
hot.
hops too. Like,
Yeah,
so
exactly.
clearly makes
Yeah.
sense. No,
H-O-T,
they're HOT.
hot
And then
break.
there's also cold break, which we'll talk, I guess, more about in our wool pulling the knocking out episode. But cold break is similar to hot break as well. It's just we're except that the flocks that you're getting are much smaller. And so some removal of this before fermentation will just provide a cleaner flavor. But a little bit of it can be good for yeast maturation too. So that's the big difference. One just comes from being cold, one comes from being hot. But they do have different sizes of proteins that will coagulate due to them. With hot break, you get a lot more vigorous boiling action, which makes sense why you would get bigger ones. Those are like the boiling effects on protein, specifically what everything we're just talking about proteins is like, you know, like I was mentioned before, everything has its trade-off. So when you if you use like too much Irish malt or wool flock, you can like if you have excessive levels in the boil, that can like reduce the levels of protein that are responsible for head formation. So there is like a little bit of a trade-off, you know, like don't let me convince you that all protein is bad with what everything I'm saying is I think what I'm trying to get across. But boiling is so important for hops. If you didn't have the act of boiling, you wouldn't be able to isomerize the alpha acids in hops. So hops have alpha acids and beta acids, and alpha acids is where, you know, if you see on a hop package that this hop has 13% alpha acid, that's the number we use as brewers for our recipe to get our IBUs of what, you know, whatever beer we're trying to brew. So that number is really important. We need to know it for recipe calculation. If you have a citra hop from last year that is 11 alpha acid and one from this year that's 13, that's going to make a difference in how much citra hops you'll add into that boil. But the act of actually boiling is what releases those bitterness compounds, those alpha acids. So when we say I said isomerization earlier, and that means like the molecule. The atoms in the molecule just kind of rearrange structure. They don't really change. They just move to different spots. And that is what isomerization means. And when that happens, that can release that bitter compound that you need. That doesn't happen in things like dry hopping. So that dry hopping is going to be, you know, strictly for like aroma and flavor effects that you'll get in your beer, extra flavor, extra aroma, but you're not going to get any sort of isomerization isn't going to occur during that. So, you know, I could go into a whole episode, which I know we have, about hops, and like, that's you can go find that episode, and we can get you can break down, you know, the difference between bitter hops, aroma, flavor, when all those should be added to the boil. They all have their different reasons of when and why you should add them. You know, bittering, just real quick for the sake of episode, you're going to add that at the beginning of your boil. I do recommend this as a 60-minute charge, no matter when the beginning of your boil is. I guess that's a bad thing to say. I shouldn't say at the beginning of your boil. It will be dependent on your recipe. I have seen people do bittering additions at 75 minutes. I've seen them do bittering additions at 40 minutes. With our Southeastern IPA, which is typically a low bitter, high flavor, high aroma IPA, our bittering addition is 40 minutes. And it just kind of goes, it depends on what you're aiming for. It's
Right.
just when you boil hops over 90 minutes, you're going to start to bring out different aromas and flavors that you might not want. So boiling also has factors that affect hop utilization. The intensity of boil, the longer and more intense the boil, the more alpha acid isomerization occurs. The pH of the wort, the higher the pH, the greater the isomerization and solubility of a certain hop compound called humulone. Generally accepted that hop utilization is going to be better in lower gravity worts than in higher gravity worts, which makes sense.
Walk
And the
me
amount
through
of
that.
so there's my notes, just like it's that it's generally accepted theory that hop utilization is going to be better in lower gravity wort than higher gravity wort. And I feel like that makes sense because it just has like less higher alcohols to fight with for.
Yeah, and I
I'm just
wasn't
going a little,
challenging
I
you
don't
at
know.
all. I was just like, wait, let me think this bit out. But I don't doubt any of this, but I was just like, wait, why does that? Because I agree with you. It does make
I
sense, but
don't.
I'm like, but why does it make sense?
But I don't think I understand what hop utilization means on a scale, like even in my beersmith. Maybe
So
that's what we can
I
do.
know in the IPA book, like Mitch talks pretty extensively about hop utilization and like nobody really
Yeah.
knows and here's different.
Yeah, I mean, I know it has a lot to do with the like parameters of your brew system, if
Right.
I'm not mistaken, kind of like your efficiency.
Yeah.
And then that's the word I'm referring, like your hop efficiency, like your mash efficiency, but hop wise.
Right.
Because I don't know what my hop efficiency is on things.
Yeah. Well, and like
I
nobody
don't even know how to
does.
find out.
Yeah, like no nobody does. It's like a nobody knows. So I
Right, that
think
makes me feel
the
better.
to figure out your or actually so the way I remember it is opposite, but to like figure out how many what amount of hops I need to add, I do the hop utilization formula. And I think I always assume like 20% utilization, but I think like somewhere between 20 and 30% is kind of the industry standard for just assuming like we're going to assume that we get 30% utilization. Like if you're buying hops professionally, you probably get 30%. If you're buying like homebrew from a homebrew store, you're probably getting like 20%
I
is
don't even know where
what I would
that
think.
comes into on your, like, I'm just looking at Beersmith. And there's no, yeah, it's not really much information on here either about that, about any sort of calculation, at least. And that's all I've used.
Yeah, because I know it's like if you want to figure out your alpha acids, you do like the alpha acid percentage, you do your you assume a hop utilization, and then there's also a conversion that you have to do in there. And then I think you divide it by your efficiency or something, and that's how you get your IBUs. Or I'm sorry, that's how you know how like what volume of hops to add.
The boiling also super important for volatilizing aromas like the precursor for DMS, which is SMM, which is found in plant material, including barley. So when maltsters take barley from the fields to turn it into malt through once they put it through steeping and germination into the kiln and then kilning process, the kilning process will kill off a lot of that SMM potential. So the kilning process is going to convert that SMM into DMS, but then volatilize it. But what happens though in a malt like Pilsner, which has the least amount of temperature and time in the kiln, some of that potential DMS or that DMS is going to survive and into your malt. So that's why a lot of times, for Pilsner based beers, you'll find that brewers, you'll see that they will boil a little bit longer, typically 90 minutes than they might if it's a pale base beer. And that's because we need that extra boil, that extra heat, that extra time to get rid of the DMS that's left over from the kilning process.
The other thing, too, is that's why when you're reading about beer styles, lagers will have an acceptable level of DMS, which is, it's still a very low level. But that's because if you think about a, like a pale lager, it's going to, to have that color and that flavor profile, you need to use something like Pilsner malt, something that hasn't been kilned for a very long time. So when you extend the boil, you are driving off as much of that DMS as possible. But then it's kind of like what you were saying earlier, Rachel, about like a trade-off that you can boil it longer, but you don't want to boil it too long because you don't want your color to get too dark. So that's why you'll see like low levels of DMS are acceptable in lagers because it's just a concession to the brewing process.
And I do believe it's pretty impossible to get rid of, to get down to 0% DMS potential in like any beer. So I
Yeah, I guess
brew.
if you made like an entirely roasted malt beer,
Yeah, maybe.
you could, but
Yeah.
why would you do that?
I mean, obviously, in things that have way more specialty malt, a lot of that stuff's gonna be mass. But if you're something is so delicate, which makes sense why you do see that this is acceptable to low levels. And sometimes I see that, and like I gotta be clear, like it's really low level. We're talking about something that's going to enhance the character of the whole beer itself, not something that stands out and is like, oh, that's DMS,
Right.
but
That's what
that's
I always
okay.
tell people is like if it says a low level and you're smelling a beer and you're wondering if what you're smelling is too high to be considered low level, then it
It's
moves into
probably too
fault.
high.
Then it moves
Yeah.
into fault territory. But yeah, if you just get a little
Exactly.
whiff of it, like Rolling Rock is known for having DMS in it. So if you want to train on DMS and you don't want to buy flavor spikes, you can go get some Rolling Rock that has a lot of DMS in it. But it's, yeah, it's
But
just, you know.
the vigor, like the bigger of the boil and the time of the boil, like we need a vigorous boil to help drive these away.
Right.
And we need a vigorous boil in general during the whole boil. And that's another good thing to talk about. I have seen beers being boiled too hard, where that brewer is going to boil off too much of that concentration of sugars and get a higher gravity than aiming for. And I have seen them being boiled too soft too, where you're just kind of like, it's like
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you don't, it's
instead
like
of
when
keep
the, you know,
going.
the directions say like put it at a low boil, like no, you don't want that for beer. You don't want it to just barely be boiling, but yeah, you don't want it to be like pa 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 like shooting everywhere. Like a
There is
volcano
a
erupting. It
yeah.
doesn't need to look like
No, there's
that.
a There's an art to this. Is where the art comes in.
Right. But
I
yeah,
like to
generally
say drunk.
speaking, if you're boiling, you can get a good vigorous boil
Yeah.
and pretty easily, and you don't have to do, you know, like a lot of adjusting or anything is, yeah.
And also that a lot of, part of boiling too, and while you're having this vigorous boil go, depending on your system, you typically want to have your boil lid raised up. Now, a lot of systems are closed and they have like steam vents and stuff. Like that's okay, that's different. But like mine, for example, we want to have the boil lid up. We don't want to be having it on because the condensation will form on the lid and then it will drop down into your beer. And guess what? That's DMS dropping into your beer.
Yeah, that is
It's the
liquid
DMS
DMS.
trying to escape, and you're like, no.
Yes, I learned that from being a home brewer, home brewing in Chicago and not wanting just Chicago to get into my boil and like, oh, I'll just put the lid on it and then I don't have to worry about, you know, anything falling into it and then you get
That
a giant DMS
Chicago
bomb.
terroir.
Yeah,
That Chicago terroir. No, better
I learned
Chicago
that the
than
hard way. But yeah, but
BNF.
it does make sense to like, you know, and I mentioned it earlier, when you see bigger systems, of course they have a lid on it because it's extremely dangerous to have
Yes.
five barrels of boiling water with
Oh,
no lid
yeah.
on it. So they do have, like you said, like a place where that steam goes and gets like directed out and away
Yeah.
from the kettle and from the wort. And I remember a brewer friend of mine telling me one time that well, first he was the one who told me, like, you know, what we have this thing, you know, that the steam goes up, and he's like, and you do have to empty it, but you like when you empty it, it is just straight DMS, like you can smell it in the liquid. And he was telling me about a different brewery that they didn't know that they had that DMS thing, so they never like emptied it or cleaned it. And then they moved to a new facility with new equipment and couldn't figure out why they couldn't get their flavor profile to match. And it was because they had all this DMS that was like backed up into their beer at the other place, and they didn't have it at the new place. And that's how they learned that you need to empty out that DMS thing.
Can't even
Listen,
imagine.
we learn by doing, right?
Yes, we really do. No,
Sometimes the mistakes are expensive, but we learn.
it's very true. I have had people apply their book knowledge to situations before where you're like, no. Just because the book said that doesn't mean we're going to do it.
Right.
Like there's a real reasons here.
Right.
Let's talk about it. But yeah, so with aroma too, not just DMS, but like hop aroma is lost when it's boiled too long. So if you're adding all those hops that you're adding at the beginning of the boil, that's going to be for your bitterness. In theory, you're not getting any aroma or flavor for them. In theory, it doesn't even matter what your bitter hop is. Just use your highest alpha one, acid ones, or maybe one you don't care so much about the flavor aroma. There's
Right.
trade-offs because at the end of the day, you're not gonna, it doesn't matter. I have switched out bitter hop for bitter hop for bitter hop for bitter hop. As long as I'm matching those IBUs, I mean those alpha acids to get the right IBU, doesn't matter. Now, I'm not gonna make certain calls for certain reasons, like my size hop. I'm not gonna put that as my bittering addition. One, it's a lovely aroma hop, but two, it's like 3% alpha acid. I'm gonna
Right.
use a shit ton. I'm
Yeah, exactly.
not gonna do that.
Yes, there,
Now,
yeah, there's
Citra.
economical decisions, yeah.
Exactly. Now, Citra is 13% alpha acid. I'm still not going to use that for my bittering hop because it's typically like $30 a pound, and I love the flavor and aroma I get from it. I'm not
Yeah.
going to. Now, I say that. Now, Citra is, we do Island Hopper, and it's going to be one hop for no matter the bittering and the aroma. So I say that, but I do it sometimes. So hop aroma, so hops for that reason are typically gonna be added later in the boil. We're gonna have our 5 minute, our 10 minute, 15 minute edition, whirlpool edition, and then on a whirlpool knockout episode, we can talk more about different things we can do hops with them. But for boiling, that is why we add hops in late editions because if we didn't, we would never have hop aroma or flavor.
Right.
Assuming you want that, assuming your beer style wants that. Color development, big deal. In a negative way or a positive way for brewing beer, depending on what you're going for. But color gets picked up in the kettle because of like caramelization of wort sugar that's going to darken the wort as it boils and produce some of those Maillard reactions, which also can affect color. We talked earlier how gin brewery should work for boiled for 24 hours just to see what would happen with the color. How did it taste?
Very good.
Yeah.
I mean,
Did
it, and I
it.
remember giving a bottle of it to somebody and saying, I need you to remember that this beer is 100% Pilsner malt. And
Yeah.
I knew what was going to happen because it's the exact same thing I did when I tried the beer. I get this picture and it's like, no fucking way. And, you know,
Yeah.
I send the picture
Oxidized
with,
Pilsner malt.
yeah, like I sent the picture of, you know, all of the samples just the color darkened. And I was like, it is, and it was marketed as a Doppelbock just because it was like we're not
Interesting.
really sure what category it would go
Interesting.
into, but it tasted very good. And I mean, you I wouldn't question that it was a Doppelbock if I
Wow.
just had it blind. So yeah, it's
No.
you know, it's just a fun kind of thing to do
Now I
that.
want to do it. No, I
yeah
cannot do it. I would have to be there all night.
yeah
I'm
it
not
did
fucking
involve
doing that.
people, yeah, like coming back or like staying for shifts and just to check on
Oh,
it.
yeah,
And
I guess
yeah, so it's
boiling.
the kind of silly shit you do that's probably also why that brewery is no longer in business.
I know if I did it, it would definitely be like a half barrel.
Yes,
You
but
get like 5 gallons by the
it
time
is
I'm
a
done with
very cool experiment. But yes,
what
you have to
size
boil.
boil kettle was it to start? And then what did they get when the boil was done?
Yeah, you
So
know what?
boiling
Honestly, I don't
also
remember. I want to
part
say
of our
five barrel.
episode. Boiling evaporates water, everyone. It concentrates your sugar. So when that happens, it loses volume. So that's
And I
the
remember doing the Beer 101 at Pilot one night. And this was, again, another example of, you know, needing to go back to there are four main ingredients. And that's, you know, it was Beer 101. So we were talking about that. But getting to like going through the process, somebody raised their hand and was like, okay, well, when do you add the color? And then it was like, oh, the color is going to come from mostly from the malt and then the boiling process. But you know, it was one of those things where it was like,
You
that
don't
makes
know.
perfect sense to ask that question. Where would it come from? You don't know. So the most of the color is going to come from the malt, and then your boil, like Rachel said, is going to develop some of the color as well.
Okay, 24 hours doing a Pilsner malt is going to give you a lot of color. But typically it's like a low color. We're not talking like, I mean, what Jen just said is a very unique situation. That's not going to happen in a normal brew day. That was never going to happen. You're never going to get like black. You're like, oh, I'll just boil for 3 hours, get black beer. Like, no. If you want black beer, you got to put in black malt. So their color development comes mostly from malt, a little bit from the boil side. But you know, we were talking about concentrating the wort, you know, just now. And so like a large part of evaporation during a normal boil is going to be, you know, not a large part of evaporation. When you evaporate, you're going to evaporate up water and get a higher concentration of sugar. So that's when I threw out words like post-boil and pre-boil gravities earlier. Those are the numbers I'm talking about. Gravity, we're talking about a measurement of soluble sugars in the wort. We get a certain number of that before we boil. We have a certain number that increases from that first number after boil because we've lost sugar. I mean, we've lost water. We've concentrated our sugars. So our pre-boil is a little bit higher.
And
Now
yeah, like you're
that,
making a reduction, like in
yes,
cooking.
that's a great way to put it. You're making a reduction. That's a great way. You're increasing those sugars.
Right. Another
And
thing, sorry, if I can,
no,
another thing to add about evaporation for homebrewers, something to consider that it didn't really occur to me until, you know, like I moved back to the American South, is that in summer, my evaporation rate is much lower because it's more humid. And in winter, it's not as humid, so my evaporation rate is higher. So I also, that's kind of another factor that as a homebrewer who homebrews outside, I should say, or, you know, I homebrew in my garage, I do have to factor that in, that like it's not going to be the same. And that was something, again, that I kind of learned the hard way of like, why do I still have so much volume and I've been boiling, you know, for 60 minutes? It should be down. And it's like, oh, it's because like we live in the deep south and it's like 86% humidity today, so it's just not evaporating the same.
So would you say that you would increase your vigor of your boil to kind of combat that?
Yeah, I've done that, or I've extended the boil,
The
but
time, yeah.
again, this is my home brewing. So, you
Sure,
know,
sure,
like
sure,
I'm a
sure.
little more loosey-goosey about it. So it's like, oh, well, if I've got 6 gallons instead of five, who cares? You
Oh
know,
yeah, but if
sometimes I'll
you
just send
are
it
in your
anyway.
situation, good to know. Like it's not something I would have ever thought about.
Yeah, because you're always brewing in a climate controlled area. But yeah, for home brewers, if you're brewing outside.
Also to note, if you are on sea level, your boil temperature will be 212, which may be very obvious to you if you're used to boiling water. But you, if you don't. But if you the higher you go in elevation, that number's going to drop a little bit. And
Right,
that's
I
not something
remember you
I
talking
really
about
know.
that.
Yeah, that's not something I really put together until I worked at Left Hand. I mean, it makes complete sense, but
Right.
you
Didn't you
know.
say that somebody asked, like, what temperature do we boil at? And it's like, when the water boils, that's the
No, it was somebody who was working with me at a brewery here in Charlotte who had
Oh, okay.
been working at breweries at the same sea level. Who told me that PA boiled at 210? And I was like, no, you don't, sir. It is possible that your temp probe is off, because that's very common. It's very common for temp probes to be off. And you're like, temp
Yes.
probe says 210, we're boiling. Because guess what? Mine does that at the brewery.
Yep.
It's just these things aren't perfect. And I was like, what you think is happening is not what's happening.
Right.
We boil up to at the same sea level, sir, where your last brewery didn't. So
Right. Yes.
that's
And
what
yeah,
happened
this is another, this is definitely like a complete diversion, but the temperature being off reminded me in the NBAA Technical Quarterly, at least they used to, when they had the, I believe it was the brewing and malting class, as kind of like the final, you know, exam or final test or whatever, they gave the students a scenario of this is what's happening in the brew house. what steps do you take to figure out what's going on? And the answer ended up being that the temperature probe was off, but nobody, you know, like all of the things were like, you've got, it was very much, I was like, this is Master Cicerone. Like, this is the, what is one more thing that you can think of kind of thing. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, it's like everybody has all of these things, which would work. Like those are all the things you would check. But the answer was, well, did you check the temperature probe?
Yeah.
And the issue was that the temperature probe was off. So yeah, just like you got to calibrate.
Temperature is always the number one problem. Problems in mash, problems in water, problems in boil, problems in fermentation.
Problem in the kegerator. I've had that issue where, where I'm like, why isn't my beer carbonating? I've got the pressure right. If only there were another factor I should consider. And it was like, oh yeah, like the cooling unit is broken on my kegerator. So it's at 45 degrees, not 38.
That's cold,
so,
it's gonna get.
Yeah. So you have to adjust for that. But that took me several days to put that together. That's why my beer was not carbonating, because I just overlooked the most obvious thing.
So other, you know, we hit a lot about boiling. I mentioned a little bit about pH. So pH is like, you know, the more you learn about pH, the more you check about pH, it's kind of the running joke. pH can be very important for a lot of reasons. And as brewers, we typically check it for, you know, a typical brew day at Pilot, we check the mash pH. You know what, let me tell you, typical brew day at Note, that's a little bit more impressive. You check the mash pH, and then you'll check the pre-boil pH before it starts boiling. And then the boil pH, post-boil pH, I should say. Which is typically going to be your knockout gravity, your original gravity, the gravity you're starting with. However, gravity in your whirlpool, that number is going to be different than what comes out of your fermenter. So that's a good place to check, but to see it continue down, which is the goal, we go and take a sample out of the tank and get that gravity and pH, because that's where you start with in your logging, because we'll take those measurements every day out of the fermentation. So those are the first that we start with. But it's very important for those numbers. And I'm not going to get into pH, because it's a whole other episode, but it's very important for those numbers to
We've done an episode on pH.
Yeah, because we've done an episode. Because that's
I don't know how good it was, or if it's going to be helpful for people.
You know, I feel like that, guys. If you ever hear an episode, you're like, can you guys redo that? Let us know, because as we learn more, there are definitely things that we know that we messed up or we could have done better on.
Yeah, like slow pours.
Why?
I think it was like our third or fourth episode, and we were talking about slow pour faucets instead of side pour.
That's right.
And we were just like conflating side pour.
No business talking about that on our third or fourth episode.
Welcome to podcasting,
Rachel. I think we need
we have no business talking about
a producer
anything.
Or a manager or something. Okay. If anybody wants to be our manager and keep us in line, pH, super important for, you know, shelf stability of beer, clarity of beer, enzyme activity, just flavor profile of beer sometimes.
Safety.
You know, a lot of these breweries right now with the hurricane relief, which is awesome, but they're canning water that comes with a certain pH adjustment that must be really important, that is really important for you to take into account. You can't just throw water into these cans. I cannot tell you the science reason why. I don't really know that, but I know it's not good for you, and that, you know, certain pH adjustments need to be made after that water is boiled as well.
Right.
So just lots of reasons. You know, you can find our pH episode that we, you know, is episode 3 probably, because that's how we roll.
But I think it was in the past year.
Yeah, I believe that. But also, to, you know, a part of the boil, you know, we talked about adding hops, but this is also our place where we add sugar. And 99% of the time, this is the place where you add sugar, citrus fruit, spices. And typically when I add these, or even DME, dried malt extract, if I was wanting to do that for gravity reasons, I would add all this stuff 10 minutes left of the boil. DME, you can add anywhere. It's not going to matter. Sugar, you can probably add anywhere. It's not going to matter, because it's going to dissolve. But fruit, citrus fruit, you don't want, actually, citrus fruit, I lie. I add that in Whirlpool. Spices, I add at Whirlpool. And whirlpool is the next step after boiling. Once we hit that boil timer, it's off. We kill the heat, and we send that beer into that whirlpool, into a big circle, which is going to be our next episode. We're going to talk about all about whirlpool and knocking out the term we use for when we put the wort into the fermenter, as it cools down on its way from the whirlpool into the fermenter. That process, there's a lot of things going to go on during that. So that's what we're going to cover on our next episode, whirlpool and knocking out, to kind of finish off our brooding, our hot side. Once the beer it goes to the knockout side, we're on and cold side at that point.
Yeah, we have no idea what happens there.
Yeah, none.
We have done none episodes about it.
Probably, I think that wraps up. I'm sure there's one thing I'm forgetting about boiling.
What is one more thing?
One more thing as I go through my notes.
And I will add, because we have talked a little bit, and I know we talked about this in our interview with Linda, that something like raw beer, that is, they still boil it to sanitize it. I think
Yes.
sanitize it. And then if you're boiling higher, that's when you're sterilizing it. Is that correct? It's,
I believe
I
that
may have those
is.
switched, but you can heat up your wort without boiling it
Yes.
to sanitize it.
Typically to like a 200 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that. Like
Right.
hot without a breaking
Hot without a
boil.
boil, right.
No, yeah, for sure. There's like, we definitely shouldn't forget that there, the sati style was historically sanitized wort with heated rocks. They weren't getting a full boil. Maybe a few minutes of boil. Probably not. Probably just straight up hot level. Now, there's also like when we talk about like kettle sours, for an example, there are different things that brewers do. So to, I'm sure there's an episode about it, but without getting into the episode, in the act of kettling sour, you're gonna let it sit there for a couple of days and sour up. So some people will bring that wort up to a sanitized heat level before they allow it to sour, and some people won't and just go straight, to souring and then to brew day, which is what I do
Right.
at Pilot. I don't bring it up.
Right. Which is also, if you are doing that, and I know you know this, but if you are doing that, then it is incredibly dangerous for you to taste that wort until after you've boiled it.
Yes, you should not be
Do
tasting
not do that.
unboiled wort any time.
Yes. And yeah,
Anytime.
and like lactobacillus, if you've done a kettle sour, that shit needs to be boiled before anybody ingests it.
Yes, I did try it once. It's not a good idea.
Well,
I
that
didn't. I wasn't
explains a
thinking.
lot.
I wasn't thinking. It wasn't like, oh, I know I shouldn't. And was like, afterwards, I was like, wait, I probably should not have done that. This actually did not feel very good. I realized real quick.
Thank you, Rachel, for all of that boil information.
Thank
I
you. You're
appreciate
welcome.
it, since I was just like, I don't know. I don't know anything about beer anymore. I forgot it
Yeah,
all in the
she's done.
past
She's
year.
retired. He doesn't have to remember anything now.
Now you won't spoil your boil because you know all about it. Right,
Right.
Rachel?
I like it.
Thank you for listening, and thank you, Rachel, for recording for everyone, even when you're on a much needed vacation. So
You're
you can,
welcome. The things
right.
I do.
You can reach us on Instagram or Facebook at False Bottom Girls. You can email us, falsebottomgirls@gmail.com, and you can also visit our website, falsebottomgirls.com.
This has been False Bottom Girls,
and we make the brewing world go round.